Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe. Tales of your very favorite and most beloved disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly and stay safe. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
Melanie.
Hi, buddy.
Do you believe in Mercury retrograde?
I mean, I'm no expert, but yes, I do.
Okay, I'm not either, but man, this one is kicking my ass. We're a few days into this thing, and when I tell you, I just had to do hand-to-hand combat with like 8 different layers of technology problems to get here right now. There was a final boss. It was egregious. I have never had so many. Wait, what the fuck now? Somehow we have one mishap every single week.
Every week.
We've done this for like 4 years and we've had a technology mishap every week. This week there were more than 5 and they were all mine.
I think last week, didn't I just like have my, like everything muted?
Something like that. Yeah, sometimes it's stupid. Sometimes we're the problem. I'm definitely going to blame this one on space.
Okay.
And say that, yeah, that, man, I'm due to start like 4 minutes ago and Mercury is on its bullshit and I'm done. I'm done with it all. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm a little wiped. We have overlapping spring breaks and
yes, thank you guys for your patience. We took a shorter schedule for March so that we could spend time with all the babies.
All the babies.
So many babies, mostly yours, but I've got one too.
My babies and more babies. We had a play date yesterday, so I had 7 kids yesterday.
Only some people I feel like are fully suited to be parents to large numbers of kids. Because I'm telling you, if I had 5, I don't think I could do it. I'd be like, you guys are your own play date. And I understand that that is not best practices. I know. But I also know that I'm enough of an introvert that I'd be like,
I was really lucky because they're buddies. They're so smart and sweet and they're the best kids. So it's the large number is difficult, but they had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And you sound less haggard than I would after that.
I hopped them up on ice cream and sent them home.
So. Fair enough. Damn. Damn, you think that a mother with as many children as you have would be your ally in that, and you're the send them home with a kazoo type.
Yeah, so we did ice cream, and then, do you know what peep wars are? I don't know if this is like my family invented this, or, you know, because we're weird, or if this is like, you know, one of those things before technology that everybody just kind of figured out. You know what I'm talking about?
I'll be the judge of who's weird here.
Okay, so peep wars is, so you have your little, it works best with the ducks. You know what I'm talking about? The duck peeps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Easter peeps. You get 2 colors. We had pink and blue. You put them on a plate facing each other about an inch apart, and you stick a toothpick in them, almost like they're holding a sword.
Mm.
And you put it in a microwave, and for about a minute, you usually have to stop it, you know, before, because times vary. And basically, as they're microwaving, they blow up, and whichever one pokes the other one with the toothpick and deflates it is the winner. And then, you know, we bet and stuff.
You're such a fucking cool mom. Oh, my God.
So my kids had their friends over yesterday, and they're like, Mom, let's do
peep wars. And you introduced them to the wonderful world of gambling.
Yeah. So, yeah, ice cream and gambling and their poor mom. They're like, can we eat some Peeps? And she was like, is that okay with you? She was like, I hate them, so I don't bring them into the house. And I'm like, yeah. Oh. So I loaded them up on Peeps too.
Wow. Were you wearing your pawn shop fur coat the whole time?
I should have.
You should have while you're introducing all the neighborhood kids to gambling. It's come like, on down to Melanie's cockfight.
That's what I was going to say. It's like the elementary kid version of cockfighting.
It is, though. Leave it to you to know the elementary kid version of illegal cockfighting.
Never even thought of it that way. That's hilarious.
Well, I love you, and I'm glad we're back. And you told me last night that there would be children in peril today, but thankfully clarified that you only meant in the story. Yeah. So let's find out about sandwiches and then children in peril. Yay.
Yay. All right. So tuna salad versus egg salad sandwiches.
Tuna salad.
Really?
Never want to put an egg salad sandwich in my life, but I actually like tuna quite a lot.
Have you ever had an egg salad sandwich?
I've never even had egg salad. It looks disgusting. Okay. I don't generally like salad things because they usually have mayonnaise.
Your girlfriend was supposed to be on top of this.
Okay. Really? I'm not old enough for this. She wasn't. And, yeah, I mean, she probably may have looked at the bracket and reasonably assumed that I've probably put an egg salad sandwich in my mouth at some point in 36 years on Earth. But, I don't know. I wouldn't have. She would have tried and I wouldn't have. There's no way. So what good. Even goes in that? Eggs, mayonnaise, relish?
Yeah, it's so yummy. I actually had one the other day when I was doing laundry at the laundromat because my washer shit the bed.
That's very, like, 90s, like, a very 90s cigarette mom tableau.
Laundromat?
Egg salad at the laundromat. I don't know. That's not a criticism, by the way, just to be clear.
With my big red soda?
Of course, absolutely. And your fur coat on, probably. Now, I'm picturing this in a white t-shirt tucked into high-waisted jean shorts.
That's what I was wearing, but they were cut-off ones.
Shut up. Shut up.
Serious. That's my go-to. I love a good, like, pair of cut-off jeans. They're my favorite. See, I almost every single pair of jeans, you know, I wear things until they die. But my, like, the inside of my thighs rub together, so I always get that little hole on the insides. And once mm-hmm. that hole gets big, then I cut them. And I got
I do that. That's what I do, too.
They're my favorite. But, yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, that was oddly specific, and I was not watching you at the laundromat. Promise. I came all the way out to meet you, and then I lost my nerve. I just looked in the window of the laundromat, and I said, I can't do it.
And the cutoffs were too much.
The cutoffs were too much. I was overpowered by your beauty. I had to go home. I just took it in and left, but you looked amazing, buddy.
Oh. All right.
Cody shorts with the hearts on them were real cute. Okay, enough of my bullshit. On to kids in peril.
On to kids in peril. So I'm pretty sure that I have mentioned this like probably last year at some point in one of our episodes. But my kids, they have a spring fling at their elementary school that the PTC puts on. It raises a ton of money. We have so much fun. They do like carnival games. There's face paint. They bring in a small petting zoo, which I have feelings about it. Mm. The poor animals. It's not. Oh, fuck.
Shut up. Okay, I muted my phone.
They need someone like that to probably be in charge.
Damn it, I was going to take that out. No. No one knows that that is the dirtiest thing podcast hosts can do to each other, mm-hmm. is comment on a fuck up so you can't take it out. You
can't take it out, yeah.
Nope, stuck with it. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, how many times do you do that to me?
I mean,
a lot.
As needed.
Yes. So, as needed. But yeah, so petting zoo, they have snowballs and gumbo. And my favorite thing, they have the cakewalk. We won two this year, which is very, very exciting. Anyways, I'm rambling. Last year, they had this really cool thing. I'm almost positive I talked about it, where they have this trailer set up at the school. And inside, it's decorated like a kid's bedroom. And it's put on by the local fire department.
Oh, no.
And basically, like, you go in with your kids. It starts to, like, fill up with smoke on the inside. And, like, the doorknobs, like, will start getting warm. And it's basically teaches the kids, like, what to do.
Right, like a practice
fire. Yeah, it's a practice fire. It was really cool. You climb out the window, you touch the doorknobs, all that stuff. They didn't have it this year. But I was like, I think that's just such a cool tool to have.
Yeah, you for know? Sure.
All that to say, I kind of fell down a rabbit hole about these little trailer things. And I stumbled across today's episode. It is very Melanie, Children in Peril. I've never heard of this one before. There's not a whole lot of coverage except for like the old-timey newspapers. There is a website that someone has made that's dedicated to it. So that was super helpful. But I love these like forgotten disasters that like you don't hear about. And you usually if you know I find something that's interesting, I'll like go to other disaster podcasts or true crime podcasts and give it a, you know, listen just to see if there's something I can add to the story. If there's not anything right. I can't add, I usually don't want to touch it because there's a million podcasts out there. You know what I mean?
Right.
This one hasn't been covered and that hardly ever happens. So
well, sometimes when that happens, it makes me think about that saying that you're not really dead till the last time somebody says your name.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So in the 1920s, the town of Gillingham in Kent, England, held its annual summer fair. Residents look forward to it each year, and it was also a major fundraising event for the local hospital, St. Bartholomew's. The main event of this fair was called the Fireman's Wedding. It was a theatrical demonstration where the fire brigade could show off their firefighting skills, which I think it's neat, you know, fascinating. As per tradition, on the final day of the fair, two firemen would dress up as a bride and a groom, making their way through the crowds to collect donations for the hospital. At the close of the day, the bride and groom, along with their wedding guest, would all make their way to a house to close out the festivities with a wedding reception.
Interesting theming.
I thought so, too. It's
unusual.
I mean, we're back in the 20s, and it's like you have, I mean, I guess it's not that unusual, but just to see a fireman dress up like a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like a very early drag show almost.
Right. I mean, they even had aunties and stuff, like firemen dressing up like aunties.
Wow.
Yeah. So the stage, or the house, if you will, it was this 40-foot tall rectangular structure. It was constructed with timber scaffolding poles with three floors to represent like a multi-story family home. So like just think of a scaffold. Like a 40-foot scaffold with different floors. The structure was then covered with a painted canvas to represent the sides of the house. With some old-timey special effects like red lighting and smoke bombs, it was supposed to give the illusion that the home was on fire. And I don't, like, why they did the wedding, I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, like to have a fire during a wedding reception. I really wish that they like developed this storyline. Like, was it a jealous ex that decided to set the right? house on fire?
Seriously.
A drunk uncle falling asleep.
I have a lot of questions.
With a cigarette. A drunk uncle.
Yeah. Cigarette mom's husband.
Cigarette. Passed out. Cigarette in one hand, egg salad in the other.
Oh, no.
There's some missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we're going with. So the okay. firemen, they come onto the set, and then they rescue these frantic wedding guests. When they're all brought to safety, they would do the grand finale. Wood shavings on the floor would be lit, and a real fire would consume the building. And then the firemen, like, would go with their hoses and stuff and, you know, show the crowd, like, how good they are at fighting fires.
Buddy, this is unhinged.
It is.
What? They're gonna burn a house down to showboat for the public in drag.
Yes.
Okay. I never anticipated any of this.
Why this story is forgotten, I don't know. Well, actually,
I don't either.
On Thursday, July 11th, 1929, 30-year-old Frederick Worrall put on his wedding dress. Frederick had played the part of the bride several times in the past. Quote, his happy personality never failed to appeal to the crowds. His groom was 45-year-old fireman Arthur Talbert, who was one of the oldest members of the Gillingham Fire Brigade, with 18 years of service. Arthur, like Frederick, had participated in the fireman's wedding many, many times. Young boys were also recruited from the local naval cadets and Sea Scout groups to play the part of the wedding guests along with several other firemen. It was a big deal for these boys to be a part of this tradition. 12-year-old Eric Chessman wasn't chosen to play the part as a wedding guest, and he was super bummed about it. He begged his mother, Elizabeth, to please ask the organizers to let him join. So she did, and he ultimately got a part. I think that's just, like, so cute. It's like, Mom, can you do anything? Like, please.
Right.
I just want to be with my buddies. 10-year-old Leonard Searles was also very excited about being part of the demonstration. His mom, Olive, wasn't keen on him staying out so late, but he said to her that he must be part of the demonstration, saying, I don't want to let them down.
Oh.
Just before 10 o'clock that Thursday evening, the wedding party and guests made up of 6 men and 9 boys made their way into the home. They waited to enact their stage rescue as the crowd gathered around to watch. On the ground floor, an oil barrel with both ends open lay on top of paraffin-soaked wood chips. Before they would ignite the chips, an alarm was to be sounded as a signal for the fire brigade to turn the water on into the tank after everyone was safe outside of the structure. Then the fire was to be started on the top floor of the building. Horrifically, this did not happen.
Oh no.
With occupants still in the home, the wood chips were ignited.
Oh.
Quote, the flames leapt up around the house, and the people inside, when they realized their terrible situation, screamed for help. The onlookers thought it was all a part of the performance and laughed heartily.
Holy shit. Oh, my God.
Can you
That's awful.
Fucking imagine?
No.
Everyone in the crowd just cheering. And laughing.
Oh, that is horror movie material.
Yeah. The officers and men of the Gillingham Fire Brigade who were standing by were the first to realize what was happening. They raced to the mounted ladders to save the men and boys, but the heat was so intense and so fast that the ladders began to burn. The cheering of the audience was finally broken when 6-year-old Molly screamed out for her brother. Eric's burning. Eric's burning.
Oh, my God.
They, like, it took a 6-year-old for the crowd to be like, wait, this is.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. What followed was the horrific sight of boys jumping from the structure, quote, resembling human torches in their flight through the air.
This is horrible.
Yeah, this is really horrible. This one I had to step away from a couple times.
I can't believe how not covered this is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hell of a story, but it's awful.
One boy, 13-year-old Leslie George Neal, tried to escape by climbing down a rope before jumping. Leslie survived the fall, but according to witnesses, he ran back into the structure to try and save his friends. Beatrice Sinden watched in horror as her son shouted, "Help, help," before throwing his arms up and falling onto the ground. 13-year-old Leonard Wynn also jumped from the burning structure. He said, "Suddenly the whole building seemed to turn into a blaze. There was no time to do anything. The heat was just terrible. But I rushed to the end of the roof and jumped." It's fucking so hard. His father, Gordon, received a phone call alerting him about the fire. He said, "My little boy, his clothes burnt and still smoldering, lay on the ground. The poor little fellow could hardly see. He was terribly burned. I lifted him gently and placed him in my car, then raced along the road to the hospital." So this was late at night, so a lot of these parents weren't there. You know what I mean? Right. Like, yeah. They were doing other things. They're like, "Oh, your kid's going to be a part of this thing. I've got, you know, whatever right. going on." The fire was so fierce that practically nothing could be done to save the lives of those in the building. When the flames were finally extinguished, the search for the charred and in some cases unrecognizable began. Into the small hours of Friday morning, the search continued.
It's so hard to comprehend how much our knowledge builds on itself because I'm so frustrated by this. It's like, how did you not have, I mean, I know it's the 20s, but have some common sense. Come on. Any fire could get out of control or go wrong.
Yes.
But it's like we have that perspective because of so much that's happened.
Yeah.
We have the benefit of all that knowledge and it's just, ugh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah. It is frustrating. It's... And for the fire department, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
the people that know the risk mm-hmm. the most.
That should know better.
Yeah. Yeah. One newspaper said, quote, "The search for the bodies was a gruesome task. The most heart-rending incident of all was to witness a small boy balanced on the top of the building with his head and arms over the side, burnt to death. The terrible task was continued until the last body was sorted out from the heap of ruins." This thing went up so fast. It was like, I think I read it was like 4 or 5 minutes before Wow. it was all said and done. Jack Spinks and his best friend, 14-year-old Robert Usher, were found together at the bottom of the ruins. There was this really, like I said, there was a lot of really had to dig through the newspaper clippings on these. I found one and I just wanted to share. It was like, I don't know, kind of like tore at my heartstrings a little bit. It says, "There's a stirring little tale attached to his death, for it appears the boy's family were just moving back to London and Jack was breaking his heart at parting from a country school friend, Robert Usher, and at leaving an open air life of which he was very fond of. The two boys were more than brothers to each other," Jack's mother said. "They were both terribly upset, but now they have gone together. They will always be pals."
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Robert's parents didn't know he was even at the fireman's wedding until Jack's mom arrived at their home. Robert's father, Charles, said, "When we returned home soon after 10 p.m., I did not find him in bed. We thought he was spending the night with his great friend Jack Spinks. It was nothing out of the ordinary for him to do that, and we were not alarmed until soon after midnight when Mrs. Spinks came to tell us that her boy had perished and no one knew anything about my boy." I just thought that was so sad. It was like their last yeah. hurrah before, you know, his best little buddy moved away, which is hard, but that part where, like,
that they'll always be pals. Together. Yeah. Oh, that's awful. That's so sad. Mm-hmm. This story sucks, Melanie.
I'm sorry.
Why did you do this to me?
I warned
you. You did. At length, you did.
10 bodies in all were found inside the house after a thorough investigation of the structure had been made. At the hospital, 13-year-old fire victim Leonard Wynn said to his father, "Daddy, how are the other boys? Did they get away?" Sadly, like his counterparts, Leonard died at the hospital 4:45 a.m. the following morning from shock due to his extensive burns. 52-year-old fireman Francis Cacan... Nope. I don't know how to say this. Because it looks like cocaine.
Oh, no. I'm leaving that in.
C-O-K-A-Y-N-E.
Oh, wow.
Cocaine.
Please know I am leaving this in.
Fuck.
Well, this I cannot let you clap back in and then just say Cocaine straight faced.
Oh, this
we're going to acknowledge this.
Yeah, this is like the worst time to not know how to pronounce someone's name. Let me fucking tell you. I'm going to look it up.
Cocaine.
Well, there it is.
Okay.
That's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. Okay, let's get back to it.
Oh, you can give me a second, okay? I gotta read it. Mm-hmm. Literally the worst time to fuck this up. Oh my gosh. All right, so 52-year-old fireman Francis Cocaine was admitted to the hospital at 10:35 p.m. that night. From the fire, he was suffering burns to his face, neck, forearms, and chest. He was not trapped in the structure when it started to burn. Without a single thought to himself, Francis rushed inside to try to save as many as he could. He was seen jumping from the burning structure with a young boy under each arm.
Wow.
Yeah. He died at 7 p.m. the following day from shock.
That's so sad. It really is, and I do feel like having that next to that whole cocaine debacle is everything that we are.
Yes.
Jeez. I mean.
Rest in peace, Francis. All apologies.
Francis Cocaine.
It's a cool fucking name.
It is a cool name. We're not laughing at you.
Oh. All right. Petty Officer John Nutton was playing the part of the auntie. Remember I said there was aunties?
Mm-hmm.
His brother William watched as his brother jumped from the burning structure, his costume in flames, at the top of the dummy house when the fire started. Following the fire, John was rushed to the Naval Hospital and was able to speak to his brother. Describing his brother's death in the hospital, William said he made no sort of statement about the fire. He only talked of his wife and children. John
God bless it.
Mm-hmm. John suffered from extensive burns on his face, scalp, neck, and both forearms, hands, the small of his back, and both legs and feet. He had a fracture dislocation of his left wrist from jumping out of the building. Sadly, he too would pass away at 11:35 that morning, the following day, from shock from his injuries. Fireman Arthur, who played the part of the groom, he lost his life. He was also trying to save lives. He survived the initial fire and was conscious for some time. He died at St. Bartholomew's Hospital at 6:30 the following day, that night. Which is sad because, like, they're literally raising donations for that hospital.
Yeah.
You know. Oh,
that's a dark point I wouldn't have connected on my own. Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, the last person who was burned in the fire, fireman Ronald Mitchell, he was the last to die, which brought the total number of deaths to 15. So every single person that participated in that passed away. It was
wow.
Six men, 9 boys.
Wow.
Not awful.
That is
like they horrific. Didn't have a fucking chance. And there was so many that like made it to the hospital, but it was too much. Yeah,
it's striking how many died the next day after being kind of lucid initially.
Yeah. Shortly after, the mayor received a message from the king and queen that read, "The king and queen are shocked and distressed at this terrible disaster in Gillingham, resulting in the loss of so many lives, the majority of them being boys full of promise. Their majesties ask that you will be good enough to convey their expression of their warmest sympathy to the relatives of the sufferers." A national and local relief fund was opened for the dependents and families. And despite it being reported, like, there were a lot of newspapers saying that this fund was well supported, like they were bringing in money. I also found a ton of articles from government officials saying like that just wasn't the case. Like there really wasn't any funding coming in for the victims' families, which is crazy. And soon after the fire, like it was a distant memory. Like it was just forgotten. Like it's on to the next thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Discussing the cause of the fire, Mayor Treacher said, "We can only guess at the possible causes. One suggestion is that someone in a fit of aberration fired half a dozen tar barrels, which were in the lower story. This seems the only explanation for the blaze, which within 2 minutes completely enwrapped the house. I don't think the victims can have suffered very much. Within a few minutes, they were probably half suffocated and must have become unconscious shortly afterwards. It was a terrible sight to see them hanging out of the window, imploring for help in earnest, but everyone thought it was make-believe. The ironical thing is that the firemen, hidden away from sight, remained at their stations waiting for the maroon signal while these poor people were being burned to death. They did everything they could when they got on the scene." An inquest was opened the following Monday afternoon by Mr. E.C. Harris, the county's coroner. Quote, "The coroner said that he did not propose to go fully into the case. At the first hearing, it would be sufficient to obtain evidence of identification, which would enable the orders for burial to be issued. He then proposed to adjourn to some convenient date when they could go fully and calmly into the details of the case. He added that he had hoped to have assistance of the fire experts from the Home Office. Following the first inquest, identification was given by relatives. Thomas Egger Nutton identified the body of his brother, John Nutton. He said that he saw his brother on the tower of the house when the fire occurred. And I found this part a little strange. Both the pushing back of the inquest and this. So, quote, "The coroner asked him if he could tell anything about which would throw light on the disaster. He said that he thought he could, but he did not know whether it would be advisable to do so at this stage. The coroner agreed that he should be given evidence at a later date." I get shock and I get, you know, there's got to be a level of empathy.
Yeah.
But you would think that you'd want that evidence collected as quickly as possible. Statements. You would. You know what I mean?
It's just odd.
It's so odd. It didn't make sense to me. I don't know. It feels a little fumbled to me. The funeral took place in the Gillingham New Cemetery the afternoon of Wednesday, July 17th, and was witnessed by thousands of people. The funeral procession was almost 2 miles long.
Wow.
On the carriages were the flag-draped coffins of the victims. When the inquest was in full swing, there was a bit of drama in the courtroom. I was only able to track down one article about, like, the actual, like, testimonies and stuff. Essentially, a 16-year-old witness testified that he saw a fireman light the oil-soaked shavings in the middle of the floor. Which, if this is true, it's fucking bananas that a seasoned fireman would do this, because...
I mean, it's kind of bananas that seasoned firemen would do any of this.
It is. And, you know, they had been doing this demonstration for about a decade, you know? So it was very well rehearsed. They had done it, you know... I don't know if it's complacency or what, but for a fireman to set the fire
when there are people
in the building, and the fire is supposed to be started at the top.
Yeah, why would they be starting it at the bottom at all? Like, at for any reason at any point. That doesn't even add up. I mean, if they've done the same thing for years, they know how this goes. That, like, what floor of the house you're on is a hell of a whoopsie.
Yeah. I don't know. I just...
That part kind of jumped out at me, too.
So suspicious and weird to me.
Yeah.
You know? And they kind of brushed this kid off, too, which is... I don't know. The fireman in question was also one of the victims, so it's impossible to know, like, if there was intent or what the thought process was. I mean, I'm not trying to...
It's a mystery.
I'm not trying to defame, you know, somebody that's passed away from a tragedy, but it's just... It's weird to me. I don't know.
It's very curious.
There was also a lot of talk about how real people should never have been used... In this demonstration is way too risky.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
Mannequins would have sufficed if you have to do it at all.
Yeah. The article said that the chief officer of the fire brigade, Frederick White, kind of made a sideways comment like during this hearing concerning this. And it does come across very victim blamey. He said, quote, organizations clamor to take part in this spectacle. Like, this super pissed off a priest.
Yeah, that's a little icky.
Mm-hmm. This super pissed off a priest who was also a scoutmaster to four of the boys who had died in the fire. And like they said in the article, like that he like really challenged his statement, you know. And then Frederick like immediately backpedaled and said that he was not referring to, quote, this particular occasion. Sir.
Come on.
Yes, you were. Like, why would you even bring it up?
I mean, the point kind of still stands either way. If the topic is the culpability of the victims in any way, shape, or form, and you're like, well, people do want to do it. I mean, among other things, people want to do it with the understanding that you're doing it correctly.
And in a safe way.
Yeah. People didn't ask for what they got, that's for sure.
Yeah. If these boys were clamoring to be a part of it, you're still the fucking adult here.
The fact that they wanted to be there doesn't make it any worse. Nobody implied they were there at gunpoint.
Yeah. I don't know.
At all. That doesn't help anything.
It's giving Bobby Nash.
Melanie June Cruz. Are you even caught up?
No.
On 911? No, then you don't even know about Bobby's heroics.
Oh, God. You have a redemption arc.
The whole show is his redemption arc.
How many does he need?
I mean, none, really. He's perfect.
He's not. Carrying
you
on.
Need one.
Carrying on.
You need one, Melody. For your crimes against Bobby Nash.
My crimes against Francis Cocaine, honestly. I do need a redemption arc because
I feel like you're absolved. The Google guy even said it.
Oh my gosh. It's terrible.
It's not your fault. It's not. You didn't name that man.
When it was all said and done, the jury returned with a verdict after only 4 minutes. Death.
Wow.
Yeah. Their verdict was death by misadventure. Have you heard this term before?
I have.
I'm not real familiar with it.
I'm not sure how I feel about it, but there are definitely times, often things that I put in compilations, where it would be hard to call it anything else.
Yeah. So I looked it up. It originated in the UK, and it's, quote, recorded manner of death for an accidental death caused by a risk taken voluntarily. So essentially a preventable death. Which is all our episodes, honestly.
Most of them. Most of them.
Yeah. The coroner's jury found that the accident was due to, quote, an error in not carrying out orders properly by some person not identified. Which brings me back to that 16-year-old boy. Like
that hell of a whoopsie daisy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care for it.
Fast forward to more than 80 years later, Canadian Lauren Ascheski, I believe, was researching her family history when she found out that she was related to one of the fire's victims, 12-year-old Eric Chessman. The disaster mostly had been forgotten about. Lori then discovered something else that had been forgotten about. The graves of the victims were severely neglected. Mm-hmm. This was very, very upsetting to her. She campaigned to have the graves in the Woodland Cemetery refurbished and to establish a memorial in the park. And she fucking did it. In 2011, Good. The memorial was put in place. And each year on the anniversary of the tragedy, the 5th Gillingham Scouts visit the monument, leaving flowers in remembrance of the victims.
You love a good memorial story.
I love it. I just think that's like, and, you know, when she was going through her family tree, I didn't put this down, but there was an incident with her grandfather. I believe he was orphaned or something. It was a big government hiccup, fuck up, whatever it is. So she was going through her tree and she found her grandmother's her grandfather's brother, who happened to be Eric's dad. And then she was like, unearthed this horrible tragedy about it. She's like, oh my gosh. And, you know, clearly maybe a little bit of a horrible ghoul too, like just really went through it. And
yeah. Digging until you get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Come sit with us.
Yes. And I just think that's so cool that
I do too.
That she was able to get a memorial up. Yeah. And yeah, that is the horrible story of the fireman's wedding disaster.
I am so glad that you told the story. It was unhinged, though.
It was unhinged.
And I don't feel like we can really say enough about the fact that this legit was an old-timey drag show.
Yes, for sure.
I
mean,
I can't think of anything that disqualifies it from the term at all.
It's bananas. Bananas to me.
It really is.
I just...
Everything about it.
I think it's so mysterious. I just...
Yeah.
A fireman setting fire? I don't know.
Why downstairs?
I don't know.
That's so weird.
And I think it's just so heartbreaking. Like, you know, because they're all laughing. It's supposed to be funny. You got, like, firemen dressed up like ladies. And they're just, you know, hooting and hollering and having a good time. And they just think they're being theatrical and overdramatic.
That is so incredibly dark. And they must love it more because it's a great performance. But then, you know, we do haunted houses out in the fall. And I'm like, how long would it take me to notice if something was wrong?
Well, you've covered that before.
I know. But I mean, any kind of situation, like, I feel like that's come up a couple times, actually. Yeah. People thinking something was part of a performance. I know that came up in my magician episode. Ugh.
Well,
how about some disaster relief?
Yes, please.
Okay, I will go first. I've been waiting for this. I actually have a back list of future disaster relief right now, so the next few won't be 100% current because I just wrote down a whole bunch at once. So, you know this. So, my girlfriend and I like to go to new agey metaphysical type shops, kind of into crystals and all that stuff. So we go to one right by the house, but I think it was closed. We were looking for one because she had something in particular that she wanted and it was closed. And we were like, you know what? There's one in, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes from here. We've never been. Let's go. Don't know anything about it. So we're driving and I'm like, let me look up Google reviews. It's called Mind's Eye in Indianapolis. So I look up the Google reviews for this, you know, new agey metaphysical store. And allow me to read you excerpts from a couple. So one says, you could spend the better half of the day looking at all the rocks and minerals. They custom make jewelry from earth elements. All exactly what we're looking for. They also enjoy the hobby of poison dart frogs. Okay. Random. So I keep reading. And there are a lot that mention something like this. One says, tip, go in with zero expectations and simply experience this place and the owner. I visited yesterday and was absolutely fascinated with every square inch and every word. This is not a head shop, nor just a collectible store. It is an adventure within a brick house with green trim, housing an owner who captures the heart of what visiting a small business should be like. And another one says they have a great selection of antique rings, toys, books, and even swords. Nice one. And yes, smoke apparatuses, exotic animals, and a wolf. Owners are awesome people. Another one gives a good review about their how helpful and knowledgeable they are about crafts, handmade items, incredible prices. Last sentence, fantastic selection of frogs as well. So what the fuck? We had to go to this place. And you know, we're on the way there and I said, I feel like this is going to be somebody who, you know, maybe had a special interest or something and turned it into their life. And I tell you, those are my people. I just love being in the company of people who had something that they were so tunnel vision about that all they could do was make it their job.
Yeah.
And had some measure of success, you know, whatever that looks like, enough for them at that thing. I love people's energy like that. So we go in, there's one guy there, one of the owners, and he is the coolest man ever. I was dead right about what sort of person this was going to be. I was transfixed, and it wasn't even about the minerals or the gems or the frogs. I got these spectacular info dumps and could not tear my eyes away. Learned so much shit. And yes, poison dart frogs all over the place. Apparently, the ones in captivity aren't necessarily poison depending on what they eat, but some of them are. I don't know. It was the most chaotic place and I adore it. And you would adore it. And you walk in and there's a dog jumping up on the counter behind. It was not a wolf. It was a healer, but I think there used to be a wolf. it's exactly probably what you're thinking. And I loved it.
I was like so excited to get these updates real time from you. It's like I got to go with you.
Yeah, I sent you a lot of pictures.
And little froggies coming up and saying hello.
Yeah, they're terrifying because I don't know what is poison and what's not, but they really are gorgeous. There's a yellow one that looks like it has drips all over it.
I like the blue one.
I like the yellow one, but I bet the blue one is the popular kid. I bet a lot of people like him because he's a fancy boy.
You're fancy, fancy.
What's yours?
Today is Josie's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Josie. How old is he?
He is 6 years old. He looks like he's three because he's so tiny.
He was two when we started.
Yeah.
Technically, he wasn't even two, I don't think.
I don't think he was.
Or maybe he was newly two. He was right about two when we started.
Yeah. So he got some pretty cool presents, He got like a little Dino VR set, which is a little frustrating because you have to have you put your phone on it, so it's kind of like a cop out. So and I'm like, whatever. and you know, just some Dino Dig stuff. He loves his dinosaur stuff. So he's super happy. He hodgepodged his stuff together. He wanted Star Wars tablecloth and table settings, but he wants a Nerf gun cake. like
Melanie, are you raising a chaotic man?
He is so chaotic.
No, that's Squonk. It's both of them. You're raising two.
Yeah, they're just different, like a different like threshold to each of them.
Has it ever occurred to you that as much as you love chaotic men, Cody is like the anti-chaotic man?
That's weird, right?
He's like the least chaotic man.
That's why I had to breed my own.
You had to mix your genes to offset each other.
Yeah. We're going to go bowling here in a little bit. We're going to surprise him with Chuck E. Cheese. We did that once where like we went bowling, went out to eat, and then just went to Chuck E. Cheese just to play the games.
Oh, damn.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. And then we're going on mini vacation in a couple days.
Yay, where are you going?
We're going to go a couple hours away to Mississippi. We're going to go, Cody booked like a last minute, like little cabin. And should be interesting. We've decided that we are going to go offline. Like no tablets, no
fine. I'll miss you.
Listen, I'm going to try my hardest.
I won't be listening to you, Dan. I'll have to listen to this episode to get me through.
So, yeah, we're just going to bring a bunch of board games. We're really excited about it.
Okay, that's fun and adorable.
Yeah. Just spend some time together, some quality time.
You guys are aggressively wholesome. Mm.
So, well, that, I probably should jump off here so I can...
Yes, you probably should.
Get the birthday festivities going.
Yay.
Yay. So, I guess all until right. Next time, sweet dreams or no dreams.
Sweet dreams or no dreams.
Hey, Horrible Ghouls. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us, too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.